of the cave.
Yeah, oddly enough. On the 15th day of July, me and my brother and Bill McBurd, he took a canoe and some grub, and we started up the Allegash to go up to work for the KP Company. They was working up there. And we started with our canoe and we pulled all the way up. Well, it was 4 days going up. And we got to the camp and they were sort of building a dam at the Allegash Lake. That was right near where this cave was. So we hired with them and went to work. And a Sunday, we had not much to do around. We, nine of us, took two lanterns and we went climb that mountain and went into that cave. And at the mouth of the cave was a big, big rock hanging over the entrance. And you have to get on your knees to go by that rock. After we get by that rock and you stand up and walk right now, about 100 feet, down to a great big room. Oh, the room must be 40 or 50 feet big. And there's a great big square rock sitting right in the middle of the room. It looks though it had been there for a table. It's just like there was nothing around it. Nice smooth floor, big, great big stone floor. And we went about 30 or 40 feet probably in that room. We come to a round hole going right straight down. It looked to me just like a well rocked up. And we started and went down in that. Slim on the hanging on the rocks, our toes and our hands, and went down about 10 feet and come into another great big room. Where there was, well, you could travel 30 or 40 feet, some direction. And there was places that we could see through, but not room to go by. So if I would have had a sledgehammer and knocked the edge off the rock, he could have went through into that and probably found other rooms into that. But we didn't have that and we couldn't get to it. But that, I don't think that ever was any people into that. And down in that lower room wall that we found birch bark with two men's names on it. There, I know the men, I had seen them. Their name was Tom Lawler and Jim Lawler. People had worked up there in that country. And we looked all around with our lantern, and these two men let a lantern go down in a big crack that was in the bottom. And they, all the rope they had, they let that lantern go down there. When they hauled it back up again, the lantern was out.
Now, if anybody wanted to go,
all they got to do to get there is take a canoe and go right up the Allegash. They can't miss it.
Follow
the Allegash water. And the last lake is the second lake is Chamberlain. That's where the Locks Dam is. And then the next one is Allegash. There's a dam built there. And the mountain is right to the left. You can see it. It starts right from the lake shore and goes right up deep all the way.
What's the name of the mountain?
Allegash.
Allegash Mountain?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that
I'm sure that the Boy Scouts would have to go and visit that.
Oh, there's nothing to go there. Yeah, you can go there far. Right up the Allegash.
And you don't think Indians lived in it?
Indians, well, all I know about them is what I heard.
Oh, yes. Well, do you know anything about Indians?
Yeah.
Tell us.
Well, I know, me and George Gardner, for them, I know, went up the main river to the Mosul Big Bud. And there was a lot of Indian graves there. And we dug one up just for fun to see if there was something there. And we found the hand bones laying there, just all in a bunch, just the way it had went to pieces. The bones was right there, the finger bone, some, there you see. And they had been buried in birch bark. We could see the birch bark yet. We know it was birch bark. Well, now these Indians come down the Big Black, and they followed the same John Rubicon. And there was, I think, if I ain't mistaken, there was another tribe come down Little Black, and they met. And they didn't get along, they fought. And that's how these Indians was grazed was all along the river. Wherever they'd fight, there'd be a graveyard, see. They'd bury their dead. And they went clean to Grand Falls. And they told me, the old people, and there was a white girl, an old squaw had a white girl with her. And she was the leader. And she'd go ahead, and they traveled only by night. She'd go ahead and make a fire. And then them ones behind their canoes, they'd come and all land where that fire was. And just by night they traveled, in the daytime they hid. And they claimed that this old squaw was the white girl, that the one that was going to take the town. She went Gold Falls and made the fire above the falls. And the coons come right straight to the fire and all went over the falls.
Oh!
That's what they told. That was the story. She didn't want them to destroy the white people. She had a white girl with her. That was the story that they told me. Now, was that true or not? I don't know.
Yeah. So, as you was asking me, Mrs. Maury, about the start of this Musquequook, I know that there is 4 lakes there. I flew over. I've seen the place. And there's a heavy rapid there. Now, how they call this rapid? Not the horse race. Yeah, the horse race. Because on the other river is Roaring Bull, and this is a horse race. It's really, you can't get through that. You got to carry. It's too rough. And so we come down the river. There's 4 miles of dead water, and then goes downhill quite fast. You got just to hold the guide, you hold the canoe back with that pole. Keep coming down slowly. Fish here, fish there. No matter where you put your line, you're going to get a good trout. And so I was told, throw behind that rock. I got 6 there. And we started to go on the sand. There's a lot of sand points. It's really beautiful, you know. It's not too wide a river. Not too wide in places. Some other places, of course, much wider, but narrows again to hardly anything. And we get by. Just how one for to throw the line, a bat come right out the end of the point, look right up at us, a big feet. It made an awful big track into the sand. He was sinking down. It was wet like, you know, yes, and he was sinking in the sand. I said, where are you going? He just stopped quick and stood right up, and we went by so fast. And, well, that little skag, he said, you want to go back? And Tom says, you want to go back, Rosie, and get your rock? I said, no, he can have it. It's too big a rock for me anyway. The way we started, I looked back once in a while. Is he coming? I said, I think he's coming for you. He had to turn back and look. We almost did it wrong by doing that. You got to steer. You got to watch out where you're going fast down that hill. We come back to the mouth of the river. And Tom says to me, try and come in the deep hole and get us a couple of good ones. And just cloudy weather, so that way we'd have a good chance to fish and not suffer the heat too much. And I got two good-sized trout, large ones. And I said, I'll keep them for Ralph. And Ralph is his brother that lived at Mitchell Farm, take care of the cattle there, took our place there in 44. So we was coming down. That must have been the year 45. We had the tower above the Mitchell Farm, about 10-15 miles above. We was coming down to it. We just had a little ways to go to our camp. Well, we had quite an experience, saw two bears that day, and this one was a little bit more frightful. He said, "We've some big rock, this rock. I hope there's not a bear there." I said, "I hope not." I said, "That's my rock, and I don't want nobody to get on that rock but me." He said, "We'll try that." Then I get two more, pretty good size again. Somebody come hungry, and I'll give them some trout. You know, they trout hungry. So, well, he says, "We'll keep on going. I wonder what we'll see next in the dead water." Well, I said, "I hope we don't see a bear." We could see the roof, the red roof on our little camp. Glad to get back to the camp. Then I call and tell our chiefs who were back safe, "We're glad you come back." "Yeah, but we had quite an experience." "What happened next?" Mrs. Bridges says, "Well," she was the operator, telephone operator at Musquequo, at above Long Lake, Amasaska. He was chief of the fire. He had a tower and men working under him. So I said, "What happened?" I said, "Nicanoo, everything going nice and good, and I saw like an arm, like somebody back of the rock above our camp in the ridge there. Just going to start to go to the ridge. We couldn't stop. We just started going. And this black thing stood right up, looked at me in the face, opened its mouth and started to growl. I said, 'A bear, a bear.' Tom said, 'Take the gun.' I held the gun in case he'd get hold of the canoe. We had to go right facing him, no further than what we were on the canoe, went right by. Oh, and he was, that mouth wide open, something growl like one. He might give you an example. The mate will answer him. When a bear growls, the mate comes along." In a way, I said, "A bear, a bear." He turns the canoe around. I said, "Get you." And I said, "Well, look at the mouth in there." I said, "That's a way down to his shirt tape. And his mouth is so red and wild looking. Don't turn back." "Yes," I said, "I want you to shoot him." "I got on my knees, take the 44. Don't be scared." But the canoe moving. If I'd have been on the shore, it'd have been different. The canoe going with the waves. And I fired, and I struck in the water, but I didn't strike him at all. I was more looking at him than I did the sight, I guess, excited, you know. Not too used to the gun, but I was looking at the bear, and he was still standing there, not moving, that I hold me on, like he'd say that. Just so it looked like that to me. I said, "You're not getting out of here, you get." He could hear my voice. He's looking up the river. He said, "Take him in the head." I said, "You take the gun." I said, "I got only one eye." He's blind in one eye. He couldn't use that right eye. "Well," I said, "use your left." "No," he said, "you have the front, try to shoot him. Take him between the shoulder or right knee." And I hit the rock behind him. Then I hit the head again. And the water was flying. He didn't like that. He turned back. I said, "My goodness, he's coming. Back out, back out." "No, he don't see it behind this rock. He doesn't see it. He won't come. He's scared." He said, "You can scare the bear to death." That's what he said. "You scared him to death, and you have the excitement." And he said, "Fire again. Give it to him, Rose." He said, "We got a lot of ammunition." And when he was on the shore, I fired. It threw the rocks at him. That picked him, and they ran. Kind of picked him, you know. His fur was thin, and he made for the woods. I said, "He appeared like a big bear in that deep water." Boss said he was shot when he left there. He shot enough for sure. Went for the woods, never seen him again. We come back to the camp. I look across, and just in the cold,
below the camp, a little cub was swimming. Going across. I said, "Why are you going? You're looking for your father? Well, he went that way. You better go." You talk like that for fun. We sound wood square, but it's just to keep us away.
There's more. In a minute.
Themselves in the Alaikar camp.
But you started to tell me the story about Musqueak and me at the score.
Oh yes, then I don't want to forget this main thing. This was this Indian come down and his wife went to sleep to the bow of the canoe, and he was paddling along among some sandy places, and no doubt you find some of the places beautiful. But he's going to stop at the mouth to the right. He can tent there. They have everything with them. They need it. And he woke her up. He said, "Come on, come on, Mary. You'll soon have to cook." And she put up her arms, they tell me, and said, "Oh," said, "Musqueak, cook." She was partly asleep, said, "Musqueak, cook." And yeah, see that? You get the point?
Yes.
Musqueak. Musqueak, they call it Quaco, but it's Musqueak. Musqueak. And it stays that way. Kind of pretty short, abbreviation to the our English. All right, yes. Rose is wrong, well.
That's all
was different. It's right there at in front of that tanning place. It's plastic place and plenty of fishes, but I'm pure French. I might have Indian in me, I wouldn't know. Probably since I got this fellow. Something might have happened, I don't know.
The trees are growing tall and the leaves are turning green. There's better days are coming that we have never seen. It's hard to lie alone on a cold winter's night. He's young, but he's daylight a-growing. Get the cold. Oh, Father, dear Father, you've done to me much harm. You married me to a boy that's far too young. There I'm twice 12 and he is there 13. He's young but he's daylight a-growing. Oh daughter, dear daughter, I've done to you no harm. I've married you to a rich lord's son. And if you wait upon him a year or two at least, he'll be your royal king. Oh, Father, dear Father, oh, don't you think it best to send him to college a month or two at least? We'll tie some green ribbons all around about his neck to let the young girls know he's married. She bought him a shirt of the cambric so fine, and with her own hand she stitched it all round. And then she started stitching it in her own father's hall, watching the schoolboys as they were playing ball. It's there she spied her own true love, the fairest of them all. She's young, but they lie a-growing. Oh, when he was 13, he was a married man. And when he was 15, his oldest son was born. And when he was 15, his grave was gold green, and that left poor man sea a-whaling.
I've never heard that before, but still, something new.
You never heard that?
And there's the one that the brother, he saw this man in the arms.
I have no voice, how to sing like
that. And that was my little brother kissing his sister.
I got the wind though. That's the song.
And when did you learn that song?
Eh?
Is that an old song?
Oh, that's 1,000 years old. Oh.
That's an old song.
Oh,
but that one is better, better tune than that.
I was a kid. I know that 75 years ago.
That's
why I learned all my songs. When I was a kid, my old grandma, my stepmother, she'd sing every night.
In the hills of Tennessee.
And I forgot a lot of them too. Well, she used to sing some good songs, soldier songs.
Them old people knew some nice old songs that were so something that had could happen or has happened.
Yeah.
They made
she
songs.
She used to sing one about a girl was stole away. Three gypsies betrayed her and stole her away, and her father was going to be hung. He was on the gallows already hung when this young man had found her and took her and saved his life. That was a good song. Life was that song.
And this fellow told his, this man, he said, by chance, we happened to meet. You know, by chance it happened to me. And he told him his story. He said, you seem to be sad. And he said, you would be if you was in my place. He told he had lost his sweetheart. He said, I'm the man that you know that fatal night in the arms of my sweetheart. In the arms of my sweetheart so tight.
Far, far away on the hills of Tennessee.
Yeah, that's a good tune. That's a good tune. That's a tune to that.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you could sing it. You have a record of that at the library. That's real nice. That's a nice tune to that. I can sing it with you. I can sing some of it.
It's far, far away. No, I think that's the hill.
You're too hard, maybe.
I'm not the hill.
I had it rolled down to far away in the hills of Tennessee.
I know lots of words, but I can't think of it.
You gonna sing a song, Rosie?
No. Do I claim to sing that? It's a good song.
Yeah.
My comical.
Why don't you sing yours and he'll be thinking about it?
Well, he wrote the tune.
He's
almost on the time.
I can't get a hold of you. No place.
Far, far away.
No, you ain't got it.
What's the word? Far away in the hills of Tennessee. Then it goes down. What is it? They come down the hill.
No, it's, you can, any, you can get the air, but some place, any part of it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to. Far, far away in the hills of Tennessee. What's the words after that?
It's
Perfect, yeah.
Isn't the only pine, the rocks and the hill?
Yeah, Master Rocks.
There lies my old home, see the far, far away. Big back home memories of the girl I loved. You can't get the air.
I'm trying to get the air. You're supposed to have the air. It's your song.
Well, maybe you can think of it so that when I bring this back.
She told me she loved me and she always
She told
mine.
Me she loved me and she'll always will be mine.
Sometimes in the parts of the
She told me she loved me. There's some of it. There's a chorus. She told me she loved me and she always will be mine. Take it from there, you. Just
if I got it, but I can't hang on to it.
Oh, yeah. Go fishing. Go fishing, you get it. Yeah. She told me she loved me and she always will be mine. Mine, you go on like this, then you wouldn't lose the air.
Fine is a rock and the hills. Oh, there lies my old haunted of long, long ago, which brings back on the memories of the girl I loved. She was neat, tall and handsome, both gentle and fair. With heavenly blue eyes and chestnut brown hair. She told me she loved me and she always would be mine. But I went away, leaving her there behind. I am the man that you saw that fateful night, wrapped in the arms of my darling so tight, and packing all my belongings there for to go, and ramble this old world in its sorrows and cares. For many long years this old world did I roam, with the thoughts of my darling, my sweetheart, my own. There one night in a little village town, a stranger walked in, a chance to sit down. In talking for our love, what there did I find but the sister of that old sweetheart of mine. She told me when you went away she never could learn, and that broke her heart, and now she's long been dead.
She's long been dead.
I can't see
her. Yes, so that's what we have. Yeah, very good. I've never heard it.
In the morning, in the morning I get up, I have good, good, pretty good drawing.
Oh, yeah.
But after that, okay.
Way out in the Indian reservation, far away from civilization, where the foot of wise men tell them so. White man went a fishing one summer, met an Indian lady hummer, daughter of the big chief Featherall. White man threw some loving glances, rode with her on an Indian pony. He gave her a diamond ring made of pony. Then he sang those loving words to her. Hi, want to be my little Indianapolis? Won't you take a chance and marry me? Daddy is the chief, this is my belief. To a very, very merry wedding he'll agree. Although you're a dark Indian maid, I'll soon turn to a darker shade. Wear feathers on my head, paint my face an Indian red, if you'll only be my Napanee. Sorry to say, no. A little gap there. Just to say this, asked the sweetheart anyway. Want to be my little Indianapolis? Want to take a chance to marry me? Daddy is the chief, this is my belief. To a very, very merry wedding he'll agree. Soon to say the Concord daughter, he married the big chief's daughter, the happiest couple you ever saw. Till all his dreams of love had faded, Napanee grew old and jaded, just about like any other squaw. Now he's sorry to say, he wished he'd never went to fishing, or had met this young maiden and said, once redskin yelled, disturb his summer. Redskin yelled, disturb his slumber. He wished he'd never went to fishing, or had met this young maiden and said, want to be my little Indianapolis? Want to take a chance to marry me? This is my belief. To a very, very merry wedding he'll agree. Although you're a dark, sunburned Indian maid, I'll sometime to a darker shade, wear feathers on my head, paint my face an Indian red. If you'll only be my Napanee, I should have sang that a little more.